This is the April 2 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois, Sherman Newland from Risk Management Commodities. He's in Hudsonville, Illinois. Dan Zwicker is with us from Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. And our special guest for the day is Frayne Olson from North Dakota State University in Fargo, North Dakota. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to us online anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's Will. Ag.org. If you've been paying attention, you know that the FarmDoc team from the University of Illinois has been holding webinars on Tuesdays and Fridays at 11 o'clock. And on Friday of this week, if you're listening to this ahead of time, you can still go ahead and join live. If you're after the fact, you can go to the FarmDoc team and website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu and hit the YouTube icon to find the YouTube video of our webinar with the chief economist from the United States Department of Agriculture, Rob Johansson. So you can either pre-register at willag.org or go to farmdocdaily.illinois.edu and hit that YouTube icon and you'll find it. Now, let's begin with this quick look at what's been happening in North Dakota. Frayne Olson is here. He's the ag economist and crop specialist there. I made note in the state stories that were released on Tuesday, along with the other reports, Frayne, that 75% of the corn crop is now harvested, according to USDA NASS in your state. Does that jive with what you've been able to see?
Yeah, I think that's reasonably close. It's been obviously quite a struggle. Guys keep chipping away at it. We're now getting close enough to spring's work where the ground is starting to get soft. We never, with the blanket of snow we had last fall, the ground never really froze that hard. And so now as we get a little bit of thawing going on and some of that snow melting, the fields are really getting pretty soft right now. So my guess is we'll take a break here until things firm up later on in the spring.
My indications from your part of the world are that the crop is coming off heavier than it would have last fall, that it's drying down naturally and picking up some weight, but that it's still mostly number three corn, although the yield hasn't been so bad. What are you hearing?
No, that's very consistent as well. The folks that I've talked to have actually been pleasantly surprised at the yield. And again, it's still below your ATH. It's still not a bumper crop by any means, but given the kind of summer that we had, I think most of the guys are pretty pleased, with the exception, as you said, with test weight and moisture. And of course, last fall, a lot of guys were trying to get in and take off the 25-26% moisture just to get it out of the field. When you do the high temperature drying, that tends to chip it up quite a bit as you're working through that. And so test weights were coming up as you exit or as you pull the moisture out. But the folks that I've talked to now recently that have waited, the guys that keep chipping away at it, we're pretty pleased that, yes, the moisture had been coming down. We're now in that kind of 17-18% range. Test weights are still kind of in the low 50s to mid 50s, which is better than we had before. There was a lot of upper 40s that I heard earlier in the fall. So we did gain, two, sometimes 3 points in test weight as the moisture is coming down. Again, for those that are waiting, they're a little more optimistic, hoping if we can get down to that, 14-15 moisture, that we'll get at least hopefully a number two.
Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef, do you have a question for Frayne Olson?
I do. I think in my mind, given the acreage, the prospective plantings report earlier this week, a lot of what is going to be the ultimate corn planted number is going to hinge on the Dakotas. What are you seeing up your way as far as expectations for planting? Are farmers going to stick with corn? Are they going to make some shifts now that we've had this massive drop in the last 3 weeks? What's your opinion there?
Well, I think guys are being a little conservative on the corn numbers. If you look at our North Dakota numbers, we were actually the prospective plantings was down a little bit from last year, which, again, in my mind, is not surprising. So in this region, I think most of the guys were a little concerned about getting the corn in on a reasonable time to start with. There's going to be pockets or areas of the state where we have prevent plant, especially in the east. As you get further west, it gets quite a bit drier, and they're in much better shape to get things in early. I guess the number that surprised me the most was the big jump in soybean acres. And again, I think that was just the mentality of the farmers at the time when the survey was taken. Again, concern about getting into the field early, given the wet conditions, and thinking, well, we'll get the corn in when we can. The guys out west will do the spring wheat, and then we'll have to wait to see what, for the cleaning up the old crop corn that's still out in the field, we'll have to wait and try and get some soybeans in. So, our local ethanol industry is holding up. I know there's a lot of downward pressure in prices, especially in the Eastern Corn Belt, given the ethanol conditions right now, but ours have been holding up okay. Our basis levels have been holding. I don't know that there'd be a rapid shift in acreage. I do think that the corn numbers, the corn acres I saw, will probably hold as we come into spring. I don't know whether the soybean acres or all those acres will get planted, given what they say in the prospective plantings report.
Sherman Newland from Risk Management Commodities, a question for Frame?
Sure. Back on the ethanol side of it, I mean, I've been talking to some producers down our way, and they're talking about switching acres, from more corn to more beans now, typically because of the ethanol plants and the possibility of them, either not taking corn or being closed or the basis being really bad. I mean, what do you think going forward, are the prospects of your area of the ethanol plant staying open?
Boy, that's a loaded question. I wish I knew the answer specifically. I do know that, again, the profit margins are still, either paper thin or negative, especially now the last, 10 days or so, given the rapid drop we've seen in gasoline as well as ethanol prices. They seem to be holding up okay so far. We haven't seen our basis levels for corn have not been as aggressive as you've seen in the Eastern Corn Belt in particular. And so when you think about some of our DDGs going into the Canadian market as it flows north, we're still reasonably competitive on the ethanol price. Ethanol price in the Dakotas versus, let's say, an Illinois or Iowa price are pretty similar. So DDG prices, they've been holding up. Again, that goes north. We've been holding in there, but it's still a nip and tuck thing. I haven't heard of any major shutdowns yet. There's one smaller plant that I use as kind of a canary in the coal mine in western Minnesota that I use as a reference point, and they've been shut down now for a month or so. It's open for debate, but they're still buying corn. Our basis levels have been in that minus 50 to minus 60 range all winter long. That has helped the local crushers.
Sherman Newland, I want to turn this one around on you just a little bit, because last week we had Eric Mosby on, the general manager at Lincolnland Agri Energy Plant.
Mm-hmm.
That is you're within the draw area, if I remember correctly there.
Yep. It's 7 miles. It's 7 miles from my house.
So tell me what's happening.
I haven't talked to Eric here for a couple of weeks. As far as I know, they're still open. And, I heard a little bit of what he spoke about the other day. They're going to try to remain open. From what I understand, though, I mean, as long as they can get rid of ethanol on the other end, but if that slows down where they just cannot, sell the ethanol or get it out on down the road, I think they're going to have to shut down. And that is a fear that a lot of local farmers are kind of talking about. I mean, we think they're going to stay open. And surely by fall, a lot of this will be run through the system. And even if they do shut down, that they'll, come back online. But that has been quite a lot of concern. Like I said, a lot of guys are talking about switching from corn to beans. And whether they follow through or not, still yet to be seen. But the plant down here is in good shape, but as long as they can get rid of the ethanol.
Dan Zwicker, a question from you for Frame?
Yeah, my question is, what is the general financial health, I guess, the North Dakota farmer after a rough season like last year?
Well, I got a colleague of mine that's actually going through the farm business management records right now, trying to summarize and provide the financial analysis, at least for the farmers that we have good records for. And the general indication is that it wasn't an outstanding year. Obviously, net incomes were down from 2018. I guess the biggest comment he made was, take out the MFP payments and things look very, very ugly. So the combination of some MFP payments, some crop insurance payments that have come in, and then obviously there's still a lot of inventory, and that's probably the biggest concern I have is old crop inventories that haven't been marketed yet. So what kind of value do you put on that for a balance sheet? They're hanging in there. We haven't had a large number of auction sales yet. Some of the guys that are backing away are the ones that are retiring a little bit early and, again, trying to get out with the equity they have left. I suspect that as we get closer to spring's work now is when some of those that are in more dire financial straits are going to start to show up. I have been talking with some of the ag lenders in the area most of the winter, asking how loan renewals have been going, and they say, yeah, we've got everybody in their portfolio has a few guys that are in trouble and are going to be very, very difficult. They likely will not get financing this spring. But the vast majority of them, the lenders are trying their best to work with them. There's getting to be a lot of the FSA guarantee program is being used pretty heavily as a backstop. Unfortunately, for some of those folks, they've already gone through one, maybe two, even two sets of refinancing already. So as long as land values hold up and the farmers are willing to commit the equity, I guess we'll see what happens next year. So they're holding in there, but we're feeling the pain.
What is the medium size or size of farmer up there? I mean, an active farm family, medium size acres. What are they? How many acres do they produce or run?
Oh, it varies quite a bit from east to west. Because in North Dakota, very similar to a Nebraska or a Kansas, the eastern part we have a lot more specialty crops. We have sugar beets and potatoes, and as you get west, it get closer to the Montana line. It's pretty much wheat, some field peas, some pulse crops. In the east, if you were to pick probably a stereotypical farm in the east, is probably 3,500 acres, would be a one full-time farmer with probably a full-time hired man, which again would be kind of a common setup for North Dakota farms. So eastern part of the state, probably 3,500 acres. By the time you get out west, it's probably 4,500 or 5,000.
That's what comes out of your FBFM records?
They tend to be a little bit smaller than that on average. They tend to be a little bit smaller than that, but very close.
I have a question following up from USDA NAS. They have been telling us through the year that the standing corn and the number was 8% as we finished up harvest last year. What was left standing is a percentage, a small percentage of, relatively speaking, of the total, and now you're telling us that North Dakota, which had the largest number of standing acres, is 75% down, or USDA is. So does the 25% that's left make much difference in your mind?
In the national numbers, no.
Yes.
No, in the national numbers, no. That's going to be a relatively small amount. And the reason I say that is, again, the most farmers started with the best fields, the fields they could obviously get into, and they saved the worst for last. And so the acres that are left out there tend to be, not always, but the tendency is for those to be the lower productive acres anyway. And so by the time we get everything wrapped up, nationally it's going to be a relatively small number.
Chip Nellinger, I'll turn to you now. What was your reaction as you saw that 97 million acre number come out from USDA for total planted acreage for corn in this coming season? And just a reminder, that is a survey of some 80,000 farmers across the nation. Not all of them would be corn farmers, but they would be choosing all the crops that they're planting.
Yeah, it was a little bit of disbelief, I guess. And then once I kind of shook my head a couple times, I think the realization is that, since that survey, the world has changed, and certainly prices have changed. And so, the end result, we're going to have to wait till the end of June. I think there's a lot of things at play there. I think Mother Nature's still at play. And I guess I'd be interested to hear Dan's thought process on, corn planting. I've heard mixed things down in Texas, Louisiana, and maybe get his opinion on it. But I think that'll be the biggest number that you see, Todd, how far it shrinks from there. I don't know. We'll just have to wait till that June 30th report.
Well, Dan, you live closer. I don't know whether you live in an area that sees a lot of corn or whether you've been traveling.
The problem is I'm almost outside of the United States. I'm only 5 miles from Mexico at the moment. We've been down here for about 4 months, and we're staying put for the time being. The corn's all planted here in the valley. I mean, Corpus Christi, or I'd say below Interstate 10, everything's planted up and running. Now back home in the Waco area, which is roughly 80, 90 miles south of Dallas, there's a lot of flat and black dirt up in that Dallas area, you know, between Waco and Dallas. And my guess is some of it is planted, but it's extremely wet. And I don't necessarily know all of their farming practices, if they've had to maybe replant some of that stuff, but it's extremely wet up in that area. And I really don't know anything when you get up into the Panhandle area where they're at. Usually they're later. I suppose this is the time of year that they begin to kind of get nervous about planting. I think they're more like, you know, the Mid-South. But in the valley here, we're planted, but we don't count. I mean, but as far as that 97 million acres, that didn't surprise me at all. I guess, if anything, I was surprised it wasn't 99 million. And the reason I say that is there's a large group of farmers that know how to really pump out a yield, and they yield themselves out of these low prices. I mean, and then you got a group of farmers that probably can't push out that yield, but then on the other hand, they've got lower cost of production. Their land costs aren't very high, or maybe they own that land, and they just take less return for that land cost. But if soybeans are not an attractive crop to plant, I mean, unless you just have to plant them and the market is just paying you a premium for them. But I do know that the highly efficient farmers that's got this thing mapped down, it's nothing for them to go 250, 275 bushel corn, even higher than that. So they're going to stay with corn. Once you get into maybe the less high-tech farmer that maybe owns their land, well, they're just going to take less money for their rent, so to speak. So I really don't see that 97 acres change any. The weather is going to determine on that. If the weather would actually break, I think you go higher, because corn, beans are not there yet. I think beans have to rally significantly to try to pull any kind of acres away from corn right now. Even though corn looks like it's in the tank, or it is in the tank, how far it will go deeper into the tank, I guess, is the big question between now and first part of May. But I don't see that changing yet anyway, unless beans would really take off for some reason.
Frank Olson, on the grain stocks report released Tuesday, the number of on-farm corn bushels was relatively high. I'm wondering whether you have thought very much about that and what that means for old crop pricing and opportunities in the next 3 months.
I have done some thinking about it. And again, I am concerned about, you know, the marketing strategies available right now with today's prices for that old crop corn and old crop soybeans. Cause I know up here, we still have quite a bit of soybean left in the bin as well. And again, that's going to be a challenge. And I know from a lender standpoint, again, we're using that as collateral. The question is what collateral value to put on it and given today's environment. I truly do believe the on-farm storage number. I do think it's relatively high. A lot of guys just were waiting for the trade agreement with the U.S. and China to kind of kick in and give us the bump and boost that we needed. It didn't come as obvious quick as everybody wanted it to, and then all of a sudden we hit this coronavirus issue. So this is going to be a challenge. I am really concerned, and to be honest, I'm right now kind of scratching my head on putting a good strategy together to get rid of or try and market both old crop corn and old crop beans in a way that makes some sense. For the guys that are having some cash flow issues, you know, that have to get rid of some of that crop, you know, obviously owning it back on the board makes the most sense. That's about really the only thing you have. My personal preference is still to lean towards the options route, just because of the risk profile involved, again, especially in today's environment. So I am worried and scratching my head, because in my bucket of tricks, I don't have anything right now. I don't have a rabbit I can pull out to help everybody.
Hey, Sherman, I'm going to ask a somewhat personal question, but you're the one who I think will have the experience here, and maybe Frank can answer this as well. But in the state of Illinois and then across the nation, I don't know about the other states, tax day has been moved back to July 15. Does that help cash flow liquidity for producers in any way?
It might some. I mean, I don't think it would be a big influence that much. I really don't. I think, yes, it'll help some, but I don't think it's going to be that big of an issue for us, you know. So I think the bigger issue for cash flow is the price in corn and beans right now. That's the one that's...
Yeah, the other thing to note is that, you know, most farmers, the tax day for farmers is actually March 1, and so most of those guys had to at least do pay their estimates in by March 1. So the announcement for an extension of the April 15th deadline didn't hit until later on. So I think most of the farmers have their least estimated payments made. Yeah, unless they're a corporation, that's right. If they're a corporation, it's a different deal. But I think most of those single proprietors have already filed that. So.
Yeah, yeah. So they're paying quarterly on an estimate. So it wouldn't actually matter very much.
Okay. You can, yeah. You don't have to, but you can, yeah.
No, I'm sorry, I was just going to say, I think the cash flow thing is big, and that even circles back to what Dan was saying. I think on old crop, too, there's a tremendous amount of corn basis contracts out there. So that corn has been moved in through the system. Producers have gotten an advance on that money, and now prices have imploded. So I think the banker's going to be a potential determinant. I think a lot of cases, some of the bigger operations don't have their financing lined up. And I would circle back to what Dan said. I'd probably disagree just a little bit from the acreage standpoint. You know, I think you're right, Dan, that a lot of the maybe top line producers are pumping out 250, 260 bushel corn, but they're also pumping out 75, 80 bushel plus beans. And so I'm not so sure it's as clear cut. I think cash flow plays in that. I think, Todd, your original question here about old crop, I think producers are going to have to realize that the world has changed. And, you know, we had visions of 380, 390 corn in our head, 4 weeks ago. And that probably has to be reduced maybe back towards 350, 360 in the best case scenario now.
So how do we tackle this? And I think I'll go across the board. Sherman Newland, what do you do with old crop?
Oh, man. I feel for the guys that are still sitting on a whole lot of old crop, and I'm afraid to say they're probably more out there holding old crop than would care to admit. But I know it's been a gut punch with everything that's happened. I mean, basis had been holding up relatively well until, you know, here recently when the crude oil market started to go down and looked like the ethanol plants were really having to back off, and that's been a double, you know, bad thing that's happened to producers. What do you do with old crop corn? I think you look to see if you can get some sort of small bounces. And I mean, it seems like a 10 cent bounce right now would be huge at the moment. And I think you move it if you can, especially, I mean, if you're paying storage on it, you got to let it go at this point in time and just, you know, face the fact that it's, you don't want to keep paying storage on that, in my opinion. And then, you know, if and or when at some point you come back in and you re-own it on some, you know, either buy the board or buy some options, one or the other with corn. But I'm not sure it's done going down yet, you know, the way it looks. I mean, the acreage number was not a big surprise to us either. I mean, I halfway expected something big. I'm kind of in line with Chip a little bit on that. Either way, I don't think you're going to lose enough corn acres that's going to make a big difference. in the end, especially if we get an early jump to spring. The way it looks, you know, right now the weather looks pretty decent going forward, and if we can get an early jump start on the planning, I think guys are probably still gonna stick with the corn as long as they can.
Chip?
Yeah, I think I guess I agree with that. I think we got to readjust. I think that the bogey now is type of a dead cat bounce. If you get a little more pressure off the crude oil market, and it could snap back into the low to mid 30s for some reason with a production cut or some better news, on the coronavirus and the quarantines, I think May corn anywhere back in the low 350s to just shy of 360, you got to be pulling the trigger. I agree with Sherm. If you're paying storage, maybe you re-up at one more month here, but you got to cut loose at some point and maybe re-own that back on paper, maybe some way. I'm not sure about that.
Dan?
Bad position never gets better. I got a short-term low coming in here in the next day or two, and then I think there's going to be some kind of short-covering bounce in this market that might give us something, in the next week. I guess I don't think we're done going down. I don't, the fallout from this shutdown, there's a whole lot of dominoes yet to fall on this thing. Everybody, I don't think there's an industry alive that's not going to need a bailout before this thing's over with. And I think that's the consequences of cheap money. Everybody's got their money tied up in real estate, hard assets, stocks. Nobody has any cash. And if I would part with some cash corn or basis contracts or whatever, I would try to look at some form of option strategy so I would be in position to take advantage of price strength or growing season price strength. I think that is still in the cards. It would be very rare not to have growing season price strength. But this market's not going to go up until it gets out of farmers' hands. I worked in the commercial grain industry too long to know that. Until that future hedge pressure is absorbed into the marketplace, it's going to be very difficult to get this market to go higher. And that's why the old saying is, as long as it's in weak hands, the market won't go up. And that's because as farmers sell that grain, the selling pressure is going to go into the futures market, and that has not been absorbed into the futures market yet. And until that is absorbed into the futures market, it's going to be very difficult to get this market to go up. And that same way with old crop soybeans. So I would, try to catch some kind of short covering bounce in here, pull the trigger, take a look at owning some kind of price retainership to take advantage of seasonal price strength, growing season, weather problems. There's a lot of things. Maybe this situation that we're in begins to look a little brighter 30 days from now or 60 days from now. But we've got major problems in this economy, and I don't know how it's all going to play out, but it doesn't look very good to me at the moment. But I know things can change in a hurry. But I would still retain some price ownership, but I think guys turn stuff to cash.
Frayne, any follow-up? I'd also like to hear about old crop soybeans from you and maybe a new crop strategy for corn.
Boy, you're just a joyous person to talk to today.
That's because you have all good answers, right? They're all
good
happy
answers. Yeah. I guess on the old crop corn piece, I would agree in general that I don't think this is done going down yet. And right now, we can look at all the supply and demand fundamentals in both the corn and the soybean market. And what's really overshadowing everything is the general economy, what's happening with the coronavirus and the shutdowns.
you know, everybody right now is really in very conservative mode. We're in a position where the general attitude in the market is we don't have any reference points to draw off of as an analogy or as an analog here. And so a lot of folks right now are just having, well, what's the worst case scenario? I mean, how bad could this get? And that's kind of how they're trading. So I agree that I don't think the corn market or the soybean market is quite done yet. I think there's the generally economic outlook is going to continue to be put a tremendous amount of downward pressure on the agricultural commodities in broadly defined. The only refinement, I guess, that I have been trying to think about is if you do, and I do think there's going to be farmers that have to sell for cash flow purposes. Don't feel that you have to re-own. If you use an options market option strategy as an example, don't feel that you have to re-own that option right away because you're going to have to pay some time value for that and it's going to be a little expensive. I do agree. I think we're going to have some kind of summer bounces going on. Weather usually gives us something to play off of. And it's that kind of a game that the option strategy is the best. For soybeans, we're still looking at you know, quite a bit of carryover stock. The fact that we're looking at lower planted acreage, I think, will help psychologically. But I think my opinion is by the time all the planters get done running, I think we're going to have a slight cutback in the corn numbers from the 97 million. I do think we'll buy back a few of the soybean acres. And again, some of that will come out of double crop corn. That's my viewpoint. On old crop soybean marketing, we're having a few more bounces going on in the soybeans. I know that the Chinese have been very shrewd buyers. Every time they step in, it seems like we get a little bit of a bounce off of it. So if you're looking to try and get rid of some old crop soybeans, I try and take advantage of that. Again, the only thing that really, to me, makes sense is kind of an option strategy, but again, don't re-own it right away. For new crop, for both corn and beans, boy, that's tough. How long will this downward pressure in the economy last? And when I talk to my colleagues, when I study what's going on in the macro economy perspective, I'm really concerned about any kind of a rebound. Even though we come off of quarantine sometime and the economy starts to recover, I think, in my view, the recovery is going to be a bit slow. I don't think it's going to come back as quickly as everybody expects. So I'm a little bit more concerned about the new crop. My bias is let's look for those weather time bounces that we get in the middle of summer. Those growing season bounces, I think, will be the real opportunity to get some new crop priced.
Let's get a final word from each of you. I think Chip Nelliger from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois, will start with you.
Yeah, I think that the last 3 weeks has shown us or should have opened our eyes to the fact that anything is possible. Volatility is massive. The moves don't have to make a lot of sense. One thing that hasn't been talked about that I don't know whether it will happen or not, but the president of Brazil has kind of taken a different approach to this coronavirus thing. And I don't know that they're taking the precautions that the rest of the world are taking it as seriously. And I'm not sure that they are immune to it, like he has hinted that he thinks. And if it gets worse as they get into their colder time frame here of winter in Brazil, you could really disrupt some shipping out of there, potentially Argentina as well. And that alone could give us a really weird spike in beans, possibly corn as well. So I think that's potentially on my radar as they go into their winter time frame. Expect anything, but you have to play defense and be the rallies will come, even if it's just short covering bounces. We have to just get our minds around that we got to play defense this year and protect.
On that note, we can probably watch Sweden as their response has been just a bit different and are also looking for herd immunity. Now, let's turn our attention to Sherman Newlin.
I mean, yeah, everything seems to be really bad right now, and I do think we can probably continue lower for a while yet. I mean, I still think, you know, you can still do something as a farmer. You can still buy some put options for downside protection. I mean, because we probably, you know, 30, 60 more days sideways to lower, in my opinion. I mean, especially if we have good planting weather and planters get going. But typically around that end of May, 1st of June time frame, the market tries to put in the bottom. and then starts to rally and put some weather premium back in. So if I was putting on hedges right now, I would look to hold them until about that time frame and then see what the weather looks like and then maybe start to lift them. I mean, we've been selling the back end of the corn market, you know, anything with a 370 in front of it, I kind of like at this moment, even if you got to go out to July of 21, you know, I think that's something to take a look at. I mean, we've even started some hedging a while back, but even some more in the D21 contract, you know, above 375. I think you have to take a look at that. And, you know, again, you're not married to these positions because lower this thing can go, but I'm not looking to hang on to them all summer.
And Dan Spicker, your final word?
I know crop insurance doesn't cover all of your production, but I think as long as prices are below that February crop insurance average, I think it's dicey selling grain this early until we get, you know, until the growing season we got more clarity in the growing season. So I guess I would stay patient on new crop pricing at this point, but be willing to take advantage of unexpected rallies. And in this type of environment, who knows when that is going to occur and how hard it's going to be. But those, if and when we get those unexpected rallies, they're going to be very hard and they're going to come fast. And that's going to be the opportunity for you to maybe buy downside price protection, maybe in the form of a put or something. But I think at this point, with prices below, for the most part, crop insurance prices, I think you just kind of got to ride the storm at the moment. I think before it's over with, we're going to have a $15 trillion bailout. So everybody, it'll be lit up like a Christmas tree. And whether or not that does any good, we'll have to wait and see on that. But I think all that's coming. I think we just anteed into the poker game last week with that first stimulus.
And Frayn Olson from North Dakota State University.
Yeah, I guess I'd like to echo a little bit of what Chip said, too. I do think there might be some opportunities, at least some spikes into the market to give a person some pricing opportunities, both old crop and potentially new crop, coming out of South America. Some of the port issues they're running into, you know, that the delivery system is kind of at risk right now, given the ability to meet the demand base that is in the global market. I do think that might be another opportunity to try and get some of these prices booked in. Again, if there's some delivery problems, some shipment issues out of either Brazil and or Argentina. And again, the only caution would be, you know, those are going to be very short lived. They're going to be a spike up with a relatively quick crash. And so, if possible, try and have some orders in, some orders placed, and let the market come to you and try and fill those on the rallies, because you're not going to be quick enough to chase them.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find it and listen to it online in its entirety anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Chip Nellinger, Sherman Newland, Dan Zwicker, and Frayn Olson. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.